Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Tonight's video is about a park ranger's firsthand experience over in the state of Wyoming at the Bridger-Teton National Forest and his face-to-face encounter with a real-life dogman. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. There are many praises sung and spoken for the green, lush oceans of trees that grants the Bridger-Teton National Forest its iconic and almost magical ambience in the eyes of every visitor. I regret to inform my listeners that I have both seen and heard the predatory horrors and howls that lurk beneath the idyllic green cover of Bridger-Teton. Once you find picked clean human bones with marrow meticulously sucked out of them, once you come across a force that kills three grown adults simply because it was hungry, you could never look at the forest the same again. I have been an employee of the National Forest Service for many years, and this is the testimony on the case that initiated my too early retirement. It was a warm August day, and the year was 2004. A day like any other it was. Nothing in the warm ocean blue skies and blazing sun indicated the tragedy that was about to unfold on Shayfield Campgrounds. My colleagues and I were taking a break and sitting on the banks of the Snake River when the call arrived. Head of our communications department informed us that a woman was inquiring about three Canadian tourists that were camping on Shayfield. Apparently, the woman was worried because she couldn't get in contact with her husband. The department was about as dismissive of this inquiry as we were ourselves. Yet it was required that one of us go there and inform the three men about the situation. Naturally, no one wanted such a stupid and mundane task. It was determined that the man who busted first in blackjack would take up the responsibility. Drew, of course, almost instantly proclaimed that he would be the dealer, thus automatically putting him out of the competition. The three of us sat around him and waited as he meticulously shuffled a worn-out deck of playing cards. First hand went well. Benjamin and Hagen got 20 and 19, respectively. Obviously, they stood. I got a 16 and decided to stand as well, which objectively wasn't a good strategy because of the dealer's jack. Drew turned over the hidden card to reveal a 6, and then drew a queen. Next hand, two bastards next to me had their luck save them again. I got a 12, which wasn't a very promising hand as the dealer had a king. Holding my breath, I decided to hit. Queen of spades. Shit, I thought to myself. Accompanied by laughter and words of friendly mockery, I got up and began a long walk to the Sheffield campground. Sun was in its full blazing glory as I made my way across the bridge and down a dirt road to the campgrounds. Their camper was easily located, thanks to the Canadian flag on the back of it. Yet when I knocked on the doors, no one answered. One woman from the neighboring camper approached me and struck up a conversation. "Why might you be looking for our friendly neighbors in the north, sir? Have they been up to some mischief?" She grinned, puffing along with her long, slim cigarette. "I'm afraid I cannot disclose that information with you, kind ma'am," I shot back and returned her a smile. "Oh my," she feigned shock. "Ooh, it must be something serious. Are those men, perhaps, by any chance wanted by law enforcement?" she asked. Even worse, one of them is wanted by his wife. Poor man hasn't returned any of the calls, and the missus is pissed, I tell ya. I'm just here to inform him about the lecture he is due to get when he calls back, I explained. Well, I saw them carrying their phones with them when they packed up. It must be that they simply had no service down in the thick of the forest, she explained. Still, it's stupid of him not to inform the poor woman. They left? I asked, my curiosity shooting up. Where exactly? They studied the map and said they wanted to trek through the forest and camp in the clearing. You know the one, the circle one. South of Sheffield? She elaborated. Yes, I'm familiar. Did they say when they'll be back? They left yesterday. I didn't really ask them much about it, but I think they wanted to stay there for 2 or 3 nights. They were decently stocked up. I thanked her before calling the department and explaining the situation. I thought that was it. A follow-up call arrived 4 days later. The increasingly frantic woman explained that she still hasn't gotten in touch with her husband, and as I had just begun my shift as she called, it was my first course of action to return to the campgrounds. The camper was still parked there, unmoving, no trace of the men. The prospect of calming down a frantic Canadian housewife over the phone wasn't something me or my colleagues were especially eager to do, so I decided to take a hike, quite literally. My plan was to simply find the campsite and do a wellness check, inform them of the situation, and leave them to their own devices. Quite a lonely and lengthy hike was in front of me, and to pass the time as I delved deeper into the forest, I would sing out loud to myself in the trees. My sidearm was swinging at my hip, and 2 bottles of water were juggling around in my backpack. The trees surrounding me grew thinner and thinner as I approached the alleged campsite. The moment it got in my view was the moment I realized something was horribly, horribly wrong. The remnants of tents were scattered around, now only torn and formless pieces of fabric. Besides them, I could see the backpacks scattered around and some outlines in ankle-high grass. As I approached, I did so sense of fear and bewilderment arise. All the way, I was muttering and praying under my breath that those outlines were not what I think they were. My suspicions were confirmed by the first drops of blood splattered on the green fabric of cruel Mother Earth, and I would soon meet its unholy abomination. The 2 bodies were mangled, gored, and completely unrecognizable. There were little shreds of skin here and there, but none on their faces and chest. Their bones were visible, picked clean, splintered open and sucked dry. Even though their stomachs and rib cages were open for display, I failed to spot a single internal organ.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This massacre was too much to bear. I threw up. How I even remained standing was a mystery for me. Forcing myself to take another look, I soon noticed how both of the victims were torn rather than cut open. The edges of the open wounds were jagged and uneven, unlike any instrument even remotely acquainted with precision. Upon closer examination, I came up with something peculiar. Both of the bodies had long, black hairs all across them. I stepped back and sat down on the grass, trying to make sense of the situation. Not knowing what to do, I pulled out my phone to inform my colleagues of the blood-curdling findings. There was no service. By this point, my head was hurting and I was walking in circles around the bodies from sheer frustration and fear. in one of my anxious laps, I happened to gaze upon the hand of one of the deceased. It was firmly gripping shut, grasping something. Suppressing my revolting disgust, I descended down onto my knees and began to unshackle the firmly shut piece of mangled flesh and bone. That bloody, gushy mess that used to be a hand was holding a piece of skin and hair, much like the one I found on the bodies. It was evident that this was forcefully ripped out of something I presumed to be some wild animal. Inching it closer to my nose, the patch of skin gave off a strong canine smell. Dazed and confused by this newfound evidence, a thought shot across my mind. There were three of them. Three. You found two. I stuffed the piece of evidence into my pocket and scanned my surroundings for any indication about the whereabouts of the third camper. It was then that I spotted a trail of blood stretching into the distance in the bed of grass and weeds. I decided to follow its lead. The trail of blood led me out to the small clearing and into the forest again, where I entered cautiously, gripping my sidearm. Now the droplets of blood found their places both on logs as well as on the ground. I cautiously crept in the straight line while scanning my surroundings for anything. Now, the fear was in full swing, and I expected to end up like those two poor men if I let my guard down at any second. I am unable to tell you how long I walked until I came across him, as I do not know. I didn't think that it was possible, but his body was by far in the worst condition out of all the three. I found him under one of the trees. It was evident that he struggled and suffered the most. It was later that I would learn that he was the one that the call was about. Like the previous two, his corpse was also adorned by thick black hair. I sat down, opened my backpack, and pulled out a bottle of water. Shifting the hefty bottle with two hands up in the air, I swung my head back and drank. The brief relief of rehydration was cut short as I spied something uncanny amongst the trees. There, amongst the green lush cover of the forest, I spotted a dark blot out of the corner of my eye. It seemed to me that a blurry apparition was lurking, eyeing me out of its hiding place. I met its gaze. Two sharp, piercing eyes stood out in the contract of fuzzy nothingness that enveloped them. I made a mistake. I let it know I was aware of its presence. Even worse, I let it know I feared it like hell itself. After I let out a frantic scream, it judged me for a lamb ready for slaughter. Quicker than thought itself, it leapt out of its hiding place and, to my absolute shock and horror, stood up straight and ran towards me. I still do not know how the mere sight of this monster did not cause insanity in this fragile human mind of mine. It was covered head to toe in thick black fur, a piercing sharp contrast in its milky white canine teeth that it bared at me as it struck. I say head to toe quite literally, as this behemoth, though he bore the appearance of a dog, walked faster and livelier than even the best human athletes. Its hind legs were broad, strong, and muscular, and its hands were sticky with dried blood. Its head reminded me of that of an ordinary dog, yet it was much more robust. Somehow, in the last moment, as it closed in on me and stood in front of me where I could see it clear as day, I managed to unholster my pistol and hip-fire a few shots at point-blank range. The sound of the shots echoed off the trees and the creature leapt back, letting out a roar and retreated backwards. I remained positioned in place, frantically scanning my surroundings, as I was sure another attack was inbound. Uncertainty about the number of shots I fired drove me crazy. What if I run out of bullets? I panicked. If I wanted to get out of here alive, I had to stay calm and rational, I reasoned with myself. It ran away as I shot it. It can be felled, it can be killed. I will be all right, I whispered between my hurried breaths. I've determined that the best course of action was to stay alert and keep aiming while slowly retracing my steps and moving back to the clearing. From there, I would see if I had any phone service to call for help. The problem was, I was about 100 steps away from the entrance to the clearing, and I had no idea where the predator went. With all the fear of a lamb and all determination of a human in a life or death situation, I began taking sickeningly scared and slow steps backwards, all the while listening for any noise. The woods were unnaturally quiet, and every so often, a blunt thud or rustling of the branches would spike my adrenaline up. Sometime after I counter the 25th step, I saw it again in relative distance, now in a prone position, watching its prey. I decided I couldn't afford the gamble of firing that far and missing, and decided not to repeat my past mistake of showing fear. I kept a close watch on it out of the corner of my eye as I retreated. As long as I kept it in my sights, it was okay. It was around the 80th step that I lost track of it again. It took a blink for it to disappear. Concerned about losing momentum while being so close, I pressed on. A wave of relief washed over my aching body as I escaped the oppressive confines of the forest, replacing them with the open space of the clearing I inhabited. Still looking back at the menacing tree line for any sign of that monstrous adversary, I continued walking the ravaged campsite.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When I was sufficiently distanced, I managed to gaze upon my phone. There was no service. I arrived at the ruined campsite and took the risk of glancing downwards. As I prayed that the beast would not seize this window of opportunity, I looked around in desperation. In one tattered tent, there was a torn open backpack. Out of one of the pockets peered a lighter. I knew what I had to do. I scored the perimeter for anything flammable and stacked it up on top of each other. First, I laid down the tents on top of each other, and then everything else. Backpacks, clothing, blankets, plastic wrappers, all in all, everything I could get my hands on. The plan, of course, was to alert others to my location with smoke and signal them that I was in dire danger. This was not our usual course of action in such situations, but I knew they would realize that something was wrong. I lit the tents, and as everything began to go up in flames, I had empathy and swiftly pulled out one of the blankets out of the bonfire. I would use it to periodically cover the flame, thus creating thicker and denser clouds of smoke. So I began enacting my plan while watching the tree line. Sure, my every move was being intently watched. The plan was going well. A robust cloud of smoke was rising up in the air, and I was certain it would alert my colleagues. I kept creating the smoke signals for about 45 minutes. I was covering the fire for a few seconds, just enough to smolder it a bit, but not enough to cause the blanket to burn. I got myself into a rhythm and everything relaxed a little bit, and sang a few tunes to pass the time. After I got bored of singing, I began cursing that damned blackjack game, vowing to never play it again. By this point, the flames were getting dimmer and dimmer, flickering as they gave out. I hoped that they had seen it, because I had nothing else to light on fire, and I was stuck here with this monster. My arms were getting heavy, and I decided to take a little break, sit down, and drink some water. That is when it emerged from the tree line. Menacingly, it leapt out of obscurity on all fours before standing up straight and slowly striding towards me. Even though it was distant, I could see how mighty and strong it was. No matter, I thought to myself, it fears my bullets. I can defend myself. I don't think I was entirely convinced by my own words, but they were all I had. I aimed my pistol at him. No way in hell I could get to him from this distance, but I do not think I knew that. Suddenly, the beast stopped its menacing stride and simply just fell and began shaking and spasming on the ground. Is it hurt? What the heck is it doing? I remembered thinking to myself. I simply could not realize what this fiend was achieving with such a maneuver. Did it want me to come closer and try to finish it off? Engrossed in my thoughts, I almost did not hear a piercing scream in the distance behind me. As I turned around, I came face to face with another one of these things, getting ready to leap and strike me down. Just as it was about to set off, a flurry of gunshots rang out and it recoiled in pain. As it was shot in the back, it exposed its chest to a large degree. I seized the moment and unloaded the entire magazine into it. As it fell to my knees, I could see my colleagues rushing towards me with rifles in their hands. Remembering the other one, I still turned around just in time to see it disappear back into the tree line. All of us shifted our attention back to the one lying on the ground. All of them kept their rifles pointed at the whimpering, bleeding beast on the ground. God, thank you, I muttered. I owe them my life. Don't mention it. What the hell do we do with this thing? One asked. Frickin' kill it. What the hell is it? Another one answered. I've never seen anything quite like it. What the hell is this thing? And if it stands back up again, you never will. Fire at will, lads. After we were certain the thing was dead, we took pictures and went back to the campsite where we phoned the police, explaining the situation. Instead of the police, two middle-aged men in dark suits matching eyeglasses arrived and silently prompted us to lead them to the spot and give them a full report. We did as we were told to. Then our phones were confiscated. We never got them back. So that's it. That's why I quit this dream job of mine and became an English teacher. I could not bear being near the forest when I know what monstrosities it sheltered.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.